Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for February 27th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find Open the Voice Gate on the Voices of Wrestling podcast feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast catchers and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcasting, set up a one-time a recurring donation, no obligation whatsoever. But we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I am one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside, as always, Case Lowe. And we're kind of in like this interesting period, I feel like, Case. Like this Dragon Gate year is a bit different than things are. And all I have to say is that apparently we have Champion Gate this weekend.
I thought when you said we were in an interesting time that you were referring to something that I wanted to lead off the show with, something not on our run sheet, which is that it's an interesting time in the soda market yet again, Mike. Before we talk about Drangate, which is what we're here to talk about, I want to talk about Coke Spiced. Are you familiar with this new drink?
I have finally started to see people talk about this in my group chats.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things I've been doing this year has it's less of a giving things up. It is more being more conscious of my caffeine intake. So I've really cut down my sodas at this point. But Spiced Coke, I might have to go at least get a sample and try one out. Like lately, the soda that I've been having the most of, and it's only when I go to taco stands, is Big Red. That's been what I've been drinking.
Well, I would look, I've also cut back dramatically on my soda. Made my life better. I would recommend you doing the same if you're listening and you're consuming more than two cans a day. But the Coke Spiced, pretty good. Raspberry Coke, it's strong. You're not going to mistake the flavor for anything else. You're not going to think it's a normal Coke. It's a very strong flavor, but it is one that I have now had two different bottles of, and I got to say I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
It's something where I feel like that cinnamon and like a general spiced kind of flavor always with Coke, I feel like has been something they should have been pursuing a lot more, because it's something, at least as someone who grew up as a Pepsi drinker, like I'm used to a certain kind of chemicals. Coke always tasted kind of Christmassy to me. So having like raspberry and have it be spiced, even if it's a springtime thing, it makes sense in my head. Like I do think I'm going to try to seek it out.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I enjoyed one this afternoon as I hit you with topic number two, not on our run sheet. Mike, 5 seconds before we started recording, goes, hey, is there anything else you want to talk about? And I said, no. And then he hit record and I realized, oh, wait, there's two things I did want to talk about. So I apologize for that. But I was enjoying my Coke Spice this afternoon and I flipped on the DDT Cork and Hall Into the Fight 2024 show. Mike, have you watched this yet?
No, this is the one that has the member of the Rampage.
I'm going to butcher the name, but I believe it is Kasai Takichi.
Yeah.
Butchered. Yes. Okay. So, watch the last two matches on this show. There's a DDT Universal title match. It's Mao versus Hikaru Machida. I don't believe I had ever seen this Machida kid work before. Are you familiar with him at all?
Hikaru Machida, not whatsoever. And Kasai Takichi, I know mainly because I know that they did a TV show and Exile Tribe is a legit big pop culture thing and a thing that like wrestling is not right now.
Yeah, yeah. So Mao versus Machida, you should watch because thank God I do this podcast with you. You'll understand this reference. I don't know how many other people will, but Mao versus Machida is kind of an alternate universe. What if Shogo Jet Takagi was good match?
Because all right. Yeah. I follow you exactly.
Because like, Machida, and I don't know his background. I'm assuming he has some sort of legit shoot fighting background, but he does basically a boxer gimmick. And Mao was very creative, and the match is very, very fun. It is very different. It is memorable. I wouldn't quite go notebook on it, but I really, really liked it. So I would recommend that. And honestly, I'd like to see more Machida. I thought he was a really interesting wrestler. So you have that, and then you have the Takeshi main event. And look, you know, it did 1,600 fans. It's the most well-attended Cork and Hall show post-pandemic. The place is electric. All of the comparisons to a Toriumon Cork and Hall crowd are accurate and astute, and I'm glad people are making that connection. I thought the match was very good. I would put it below, in terms of an in-ring, you know, first match in wrestler, I thought Strong Machine J had a better debut match. I thought Kento Kabune probably had a better debut match, but when I think about it, it is probably the best debut since the man we now know as SB Kento. So I obviously thought very highly of him and his debut match, and DDT's got me for a little bit. I was very impressed with the last two matches on this show. I know there is a hyped Masato Tanaka match with the former Toy Kojima that I need to get to. People have been really into that, and I think it would just be very good for Japanese wrestling if DDT. I thought they had a very good 2022. I was very bored by their 2023. It would be really nice if they heated up a little bit in 2024.
Yeah, it was something where, at least for me, I like Yuki Ueno, and getting the belt onto him, for me, long-term, I was like, yeah, nope, that's kind of where I'll be interested in seeing where it kind of goes from here. And I think the thing I look at, Kasai Takechi and the Toriumon things, at least, like, again, I have not seen this. I'll probably try to make time for this before I stream tomorrow afternoon to check this out. I think that you look at Japanese wrestling right now, case, and one of the wild things, I think, if we want to extrapolate this, and this is kind of the place where we do these kind of things, case, I think people who are professional dancers, if it be break dancers like Strong Machine J or Saya Kamatani or other styles of performers like that, kind of have become like this feeder into professional wrestling in Japan, at least for what I feel like people who have been over the last decade or so seen as like high level prospects. The background hasn't necessarily been either. Like, you do have a couple former sumos, like you have your Yukio Nayas, but really by and large, sumo to professional wrestling does not happen as much anymore. But professional dancer, especially like breakdance or hip hop dancer into Japanese wrestling, has kind of become like a funnel in the same way that I look at the NIL deals for WWE, and it's like, oh, they just got a whole bunch of college prospects. I kind of want to go take all of like the top 30 breakdancers, hip hop dancers within like Japan and get them into professional wrestling, because I feel like there might be something.
You make a good point there. I would really like more sumos in wrestling right now. That's weird that that pipeline stopped.
I think it's a corollary also with how mixed martial arts is in Japan as well. That like a lot of the former sumos, at least up until Pride, really, if we really want to do like that, but really like Takeda kind of becoming that kind of figure, you would have had that that feed into professional wrestling. But now I think you look at sumo, and especially like the Sekitori out there and the step is, and especially when you consider now almost all the extremely high level, with some exceptions, are Mongolian other forms of, I would say, Central Asian wrestlers. Like, they're going to go into MMA. It makes more sense for that, that there's not exactly like the pull into professional wrestling the way that we have seen, you know, the last 20, 30 years up until this point.
The thing it made me think of watching that debut was, Mike, you know this, and I think we talked about it in 2020, but it's certainly been a while. But you remember there was a Dragon Gate Dojo member who was receiving private training sessions, and I believe his background was that he had like a real sports pedigree. And that he was, you know,
rugby. I want to say rugby. I don't hold me to that. I mean, this is all colloquial kind of stories.
Yeah,
but I want to say it was rugby. If this is what we're what I'm thinking.
Yeah. No, okay. It is. I mean, this would have been, I guess now in hindsight, this would have been around the same time that Kabune and Kamei and Kakuta were in the dojo. But Dragon Gate had this guy who we heard a lot about, who was, again, some sort of legitimate athlete who had tried his hand at Dragon Gate, and he was getting private training sessions from people. He was not looked at as a green boy in the same way that literally everybody else that's accepted into the dojo is. He was this special guy who we heard, you know, if he ever debuts, he not only has this raw talent that people are going to be amazed by, but especially in the context of Dragon Gate, he was going to be something so different than just your average Dragon Gate came to my hometown in 2007. Now I'm a Dragon Gate wrestler type story.
It would have been more like how, for lack of better words, they manufactured Ryo Tanaka's debut in a way.
That's a good point. Yeah.
A way that they were going to kind of do the full court press and try to use it as a non-traditional, at least as it relates to Dragon System fan base, try to get someone outside of that into this with this this trainee that was called like Weapon X.
I was thinking it was Project X, but you're right, it was Weapon X.
Weapon X, and I just have a very far-fetched idea. Case, check your Slack DMs about something that just popped in my head that now about this figure. We're not going to say this name on air, but I just want you to think about this for 1 second. Do you think I'm off on that? Do you think that there's like a possibility that I might be right about who this person is? Because I think this person is now still in wrestling.
No, so the story that I heard was this guy got out of wrestling. I'm looking at our list. We have a spreadsheet of Dragon Gate debutees, and there was definitely a point in time where I had to check and say, hey, is so-and-so debuting this guy? And I was told, no, that guy left the dojo. He got out of wrestling. He never made it. So, unfortunately, the DM Mike just sent me is very juicy, but I do not believe that is correct. Thus, we will be moving along.
It would be the person that would make a lot of sense for a lot of different things.
It would be like a Scooby-Doo mystery. It would be very fun to dissect that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I am 99% sure the special Dragon Gate trainee just never made it out of the dojo. Just at one point he said, I'm good. This is very hard. And I am not going to be doing this going forward. But yeah, the English translation we got was, I forgot about that. They called him Weapon X. And for like 6 months, we were getting updates about this guy, and it was very, very exciting. And then it just never came into fruition.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that, like, at least for how wrestling is and like the dot and especially the Dragon System and the way that the dojo is, that like it was someone that was like treated special in a way that, like, the fact that we were even getting a report about this, it was wild in that.
Yes, but that is unfortunately a what could have been. But what is, like you said, Champion Gate this weekend. A lot to cover before we get there. And then, of course, we will do a deep preview of Nostalgia Gate, the first ever show of its kind, and Champion Gate in Osaka this weekend. Both shows I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, it's an interesting weekend, and it's one that I know that I kind of was the person raising their eyebrow or asking the questions about Nostalgia Gate or Gate of Nostalgia. But now that we are upon it, it's something where that it's going to be different, and I'm going to enter the weekend open-minded. But before we get into looking ahead in Dragon Gate's weekend in Osaka, let's talk about the big things going into this weekend. Coming from the weekend, they were in Gifu, Hiroshima, and then they had their annual Kobe Art Center show. It feels like every February they are in this awkward building, not Kobe Sambo Hall. It is the Art Center this weekend, and similar to last week, where we will talk briefly about what went on in the promotion, at least in ring. The big story is coming out of Gifu. The main event was Gold Class versus Z-Bratz, and during the first few minutes of the match, Yoshiki Kato in a go behind knee buckled, goes to the outside. Essentially, the remainder of this match, I think it's fair to say, was wrestled almost as a Gold Class 3-on-2 handicap match. Kato was at ringside the entirety of the match. It was not a situation where, like Tien Revolution, where when he went down, he was not seen from again. But after that, we had the announcement that the Open the Triangle Gate Championships, which would have been that Z-Bratz team, Kai, Ishin, and Kato versus D-Courage. The Z-Bratz champion team has to vacate as Kato has a knee injury. He's been pulled from all cards. There's a little wrinkle to this that we'll get into us that just seems like they just haven't changed one of his matches coming up. But looks like that Kato seems to be out for a pretty good while, at least from the way that he crumpled in this match.
Yeah, so obviously bad news here with Kato going down, and it is another one of Dragon Gate's young guys getting injured. And so there was some discourse in the Voices of Wrestling Discord over the last few days of, you know, whether or not the promotion just has bad luck or whether or not the promotion needs to do something to address the fact that these young guys keep on getting hurt. Because you look at who's out right now, it's now Kato, it was Fuda, it is Nagano, it is Tien Revolution, and it is Minorita, and up until a month ago, it was also Mochizuki Jr., and it's the young guys on the roster, you know, outside of Eita, who got injured, and Noah. The guys that are hurt are the guys that are with the least amount of experience, and so I understand why people can panic over this a little bit, especially because it is so abnormal within the history of this promotion. I mean, look at who is headlining Champion Gate in Osaka. It's Susumu Yokosuka. He's wrestled every single month since the end of 1998. The man never gets hurt. I wrote extensively about Masaki Mochizuki in January. He hasn't been hurt since the end of 2001. His son, who's been wrestling for less than 2 years, has already been hurt 3 or 4 times. It's just a very odd thing that Dragon Gate is undergoing right now. But I went back and I watched all of the injury footage for Kato, for Junior, for Fuda, for Nagano, for Tien Revolution, and for Minorita. And when you go back and look at it, I think it is less concerning and more aggravating than anything, because Kato, you know, he's doing a go-behind on a suplex and his knee buckles, and now he's probably out at least 6 months. There's nothing inherently dangerous about that spot, nothing that says that is more dangerous than any other basic wrestling maneuver. When you go back to Junior's last century, which was at Gate of Destiny, it is a bicycle kick in the corner on Hyo, and he injures his knee. And this is a move that he had done hundreds and hundreds of times up to that point. It just so happened that this is the one that tore his knee apart. You can make the argument maybe he needs to stretch more, but again, a bicycle kick in the corner, not something that I would call inherently dangerous. If you go back to Ryo Fuda's injury, and he got hurt on the same show as Kaito Nagano. I know Nagano came back and wrestle a little bit. But I don't know about you, Mike. Nagano did not look healthy to me when he came back from his injury in September. I think it was, what, December or January he wrestled a little bit. He never looked comfortable to me.
He basically had 2 weeks back.
Yeah, and it didn't look good. So Fuda dislocates two fingers, and I can't tell exactly when it happens in the match, but it looks like it happened. He did a drop kick in the corner, and he landed weird. Yeah. He dislocated two fingers, and by all accounts, it couldn't have been a worse dislocation either.
Yeah, it was something that I've had family and friends who've had to have finger reconstructive surgeries, and it is something where if it breaks badly, like, it is surprising how long it takes your fingers to, like, after you have to go in and have pins and, like, that sort of thing, it's surprising how long it takes to return from that. Like, it is one of those things that your fingies are sensitive.
Oh,
like,
my God, they're so sensitive. So, yeah, you know, he gets hurt on a dropkick, same show, Kaito Nagano. This is the injury that I'll use as his jumping off point, because, again, I don't think he looked right when he returned, you know, a month and a half ago. But Nagano, dropkick in the corner, lands on his shoulder. We've seen Kaito Nagano do a million dropkicks. He just happened to land on his shoulder. Again, more annoying than it is dangerous. You go back a month before that, TN Revolution, Mike, he got hurt doing a stomp. He tore his knee up stomping a guy.
Yeah, he just planted and twisted. It was one of those things that it could have been just, oh, did you have a little bit of moisture on the bottom of your boot, maybe? Like, or was it like a slick thing that you got? It was one of those like freak things that it's just frustrating. And it was something that I try to, like, when I saw those kind of conversations, I was just like, okay, if you're bringing that up, then you are just parachuting in, because if you remember what the injuries are, in case you've laid them out kind of brilliantly, I don't know how the reasonable conclusion is that they have to rebuild the training program. I mean, it's something where, case I would offer as a not a full counterpoint to the idea that this is an aberration. We've been over the last 2 months, and we'll continue throughout the year, been doing the rewind and rewatch project. In our way, you will kind of get a timeline through 25 years through it. But we get to go through, case, all of this old materials and a lot of reporting from the 90s and early 2000s. And one thing that that has struck me is, wow, basically, like, these the Torimong Japan guys, they were banged up a lot more than I realized. And a lot of the rookies were banged up a lot more than I realized. And that was something that kind of, like, as it was brought up and as things were going, I was thinking about, like, oh yeah, Naruki Doi was like the best example of this, because how injured he was basically cost them an ace seat in T2P as a rookie. He was too hurt, so they had to hold him back and he lost his push.
Well, again, we talked about it last week. You know, Mochi gets ousted from M2K at the beginning of February 2002, but he's still teaming with M2K on house shows because the roster was smaller at that point just because they didn't have as many students. This is pre-T2P, but also they had so many injuries that they're like, okay, well, I guess we're just going to do partners don't get along here because we have to fill these shows with something.
Yeah.
And that's what they have to do. So again, it's not... There is history and precedent for this. It is very odd because it's Dragon Gate, and I think all things considered, they've had a pretty lucky 25 years. But even if you round out this list with Minorita, and you can watch this on YouTube, he's doing a reversal sequence with Dragon Daya, and Daya hits the ropes, and Minorita goes to turn around to face him, tears his ACL. You know, this isn't NXT women. Obviously, everybody that's ever heard the show knows how much I hate NXT and how much I, in particular, hate the way their women wrestle. This isn't NXT women doing stuff way beyond their depth and getting hurt and doing things that are dangerous that they have no business doing. Again, I'm not a doctor. I don't even pretend to play one on TV. But I would push back on the notion that there is a systematic issue here. And again, watching these back-to-back today, I went, oh my God, this couldn't have been any worse. These injuries are nothing. These are, more often than not, these are non-contact injuries that are happening. That is bizarre. And it just so happens that it is plaguing this roster right now.
It is something where, like, if there is the thinnest of threads that I think one could do. And I feel like that this would be one of the least charitable kind of ways of looking at it. You could say maybe, oh, Dragon Gate has a canvas that often has vinyl on it because of advertisements. You could say like maybe the canvases are slick, but I never heard that about any one of these injuries case, that there was like a slick mat or anything like this. Everything that whenever these happen, it's like, oh God. Yeah. That's usually the response we hear is, oh God, as the response, and not like an, oh God, the world is falling down upon us. It's like this again, basically.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, you just have to highlight the TN Revolution injury, because I think he is the spotlight of this, and everything else can be sort of reflected off of him as like, look, the guy hurt himself stomping a guy. You know, it doesn't get more low impact or low stakes than that. You know, I haven't asked anybody about the dojo in particular in a while. Maybe they're doing a bunch of drills that are just killing their lower halves, but I tend to think that's not the case. And I tend to think this is just a very odd stretch of bad luck for this promotion. You know, but luckily, I think there's still a bunch of good stuff here. I mean, again, I think these Osaka shows are loaded. I'm very much looking forward to them. But I also wish they were loaded up with young guys on the card as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think in a lot of ways, this Gate of Nostalgia show, one of those kind of last ringing things in my head that I still kind of look at is like, oh, it is something where instead of doing like a lot of modern versus new, it's a lot of like, oh, okay, so we have Fuji and Kanda. So I guess we're doing Renaissance, because that's what these two guys are, and these two guys are healthy in a way.
Yeah, very strange, very strange. But that is the unfortunate part of this week, is that Kato is hurt. I had said a number of times, I thought Kato was really figuring out what he wanted to do as a heel and was doing the best work of his young career. I think for the first time, he was looking not like, you know, the way somebody had described it to me, a big Japan wrestler that had stumbled into Dragon Gate, but rather a big Dragon Gate wrestler doing his thing in the confines of the promotion. And it's a real bummer now that he will be on the shelf for a while. I mean, they didn't waste any time vacating the titles and taking him off of that show. So that can't be good news when they act as quickly as they do.
Yeah, and it's also something where we also have to like look at with how Dragon Gate is running. One thing that they've done this year, case, that I feel like is somewhat of a newer sort of thing, they did basically a contract signing ceremony before the shows at Kobe Art Center. So like they had a signing that they had to take care of immediately. So they had to name something, because they were what was going to be the Triangle Gate match. They didn't really have there was not really any benefit of time, I feel.
No, you're exactly right. So they subbed in Shun there, and I have more thoughts on Shun later.
Yeah, and for the remainder of the weekend, of course, they were in Gifu, a homecoming show for Kota Minora, at least. It's something where like there's a lot of people from Gifu in the company, but right now it's like Kota Minora and Shun Skywalker are the ones from Gifu, not on the injury list, so they are the ones in the main event. There was a show as well in Hiroshima with a big feature for Sachi Hoko Boy, and then the Kobe Art Center show on the network, case. I think this is probably I felt like that show was the one of the better Kobe Art Center shows that they had, as meager of praise that as that is, basically. Like, it was fine, I felt like.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything from any of these shows that anybody needs to go out of their way to see. On the Gifu YouTube upload, I did like Daya and Kakuta versus Strong Machine J and UT quite a bit, but that was probably my favorite of the bunch. Nothing here really jumped out to me. I mean, other than that, I like Gianni and Skywalker versus KZ and Strong Machine J on this Kobe show. I found the Kobe show to be inoffensive. I didn't find it to necessarily be very good, but I have been operating under the mindset with Fukuoka last weekend and Kobe this weekend where, hey, if the shows were good, great, I'm not going to complain. But I think they had paved the way for Champion Gate to a point where I was very, very much accepting of some lackluster shows here, because with Champion Gate and then Rey de Parejas coming up, I think things are going to heat up very, very quickly.
Yeah, it is something where, at least for me, I thought it was kind of interesting. There was a UT and Kagetora match that I was like, okay, we're going to kind of get a little bit of a Prime Zone special. No, it was like 7 minutes and not really a whole lot of like hold for hold stuff throughout it. I do think like the one thing out of the weekend worth watching was that Johnny and Shun versus KZ and Strong Machine J. It just was like a very gleeful brawl. And it was something where the Kobe Art Center crowd, I would think by now that they would kind of know Johnny's bit, but it was one of the more active audiences, I feel like, for Johnny Valletta since his debut in the company.
Yeah, you got to credit them. You know, they have beat his gimmick into the ground in a way that is going to end up being very successful for them. And I made this point when he debuted, you know, you have to think about like a Bad Luck Fale G1 where every finish is the exact same and they do the same stretcher job in every town and you're sick of watching it by night 3 and there's 12 more nights to go. But you know what? It's effective. And you sometimes, especially in today's world, things move so fast. You have to swing the pendulum back so hard in the opposite direction. And for Valletta, they just have to beat this into the ground until they can't anymore. And I think they're doing the right thing because now, look, if I was at this show, to me, part of the fun would be, okay, we're getting a Valletta entrance. Where is he going to go? Who's he going to beat up? What part of the crowd is he going to focus on? To me, it is becoming an overwhelming positive. And I think for all the great entrances he's had, this Kobe one might have been the top of the list.
And it's something where, like, if you want to have a fun game to play, and I think that this is something that it tells us really kind of the state of the show and really where things are, that everything's set for Champion Gate. Everything was set for Champion Gate 3 weeks ago, basically, and they had to readjust things for Kato, but we're basically arriving at the same destination. That the most amusing thing for me from Dragon Gate on this weekend was, okay, that long, great crowd brawl before the match started. And Strong Machine J is just thriving and kind of the opportunity. He's become kind of the most interesting person on the roster very quickly just because of how frustrated he is with the Remainder Natural Vibes. But you contrast Johnny Valletta in that brawl case with by far, and hey, when you are this over, you are allowed to milk it this way. The longest goddamn Hyo Dollar entrance of all time in the main event, where there was he still had people in the crowd who he could have gone and gotten more Hyo bucks onto his suspenders, but he had to get into the ring because it was taking too long.
So I'm assuming you did not watch the new Prime Zone that came out today, did you?
I have not gotten to that point yet. I would like to congratulate our new general manager, I believe, for Prime Zone Hyo.
Yes, yeah, so I talked to somebody that was at the show today, and they noted two things. They said, one, the attendance was double what it was last time. Now, Cage Match lists that at 75 people, which I think the other show did about 30, so that makes
right,
sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that building is tiny. It's probably 100 capacity.
And they do it like in the middle of the workday on a Tuesday.
Yes.
So you're really like, this is not a show that's run with intent of profit maximization.
Yeah, I'm trying to see here. They don't have attendance for the January 2020 Prime Zone. I'd be curious to see what that was.
I feel like Lapis at most I've ever seen was like 112, and that was well before COVID.
Yeah, so December 2019, they have a listed attendance of 91 fans. So again, we're not talking about a massive building here. This is still a place that you're lucky to get 100 people in there. But I was told double the amount of people that were there last time. And it cannot be underestimated or overstated that Hyo is the most over guy in the company right now. That this is kind of his world and we're all living in it. And that his stuff on Prime Zone was so unbelievably over.
Yeah. And it's something where like we've had like this question about Luis Monte as Dreamgate champion. And in a lot of ways, a lot of those questions are kind of erased by the fact that he is partners with Hyo right now. It's something where it's the hottest act in the company. And he gets the, and part of that is Luis Monte, but most of that is Hyo right now.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Monte's in a great spot. Monte just has to keep his head above water. And I think defending the title against Susumu, much more on that later, I think he's going to be in a very good spot exiting Osaka, and then obviously he's teamed up with Hyo during Rey de Parejas, which I was not expecting. I thought they would add a third and maybe have Monte rest during this period, but instead they're going to have them team up. So he's in a great spot. You know, I wonder at times if Hyo being as over as he is bad news for Monte, but honestly, I think if Monte could even somewhat hang with him, it's only going to help Monte going forward.
Yeah, it's something where I think that it's kind of like takes things down a couple notches. I think it's something where you don't necessarily need to have like the expectations of Kakuta, or like how Kakuta, the Dreamgate just never really seemed like it was the thing after he won the title. You're able to not necessarily pull focus fully away from the Dreamgate now, but it is something where you look at the twosome and the pairing, and especially as we go into this weekend, and hell, then we're in March already, and Rey de Parejas, and as you're saying, things seem to be right on the right about to kick off for that. So when we look at the shows that they had over the last few days, it's just like it's kind of interesting in a way that I know that Case, your least favorite weekend of the Dragon Gate year is the day before Dead or Alive.
Oh god, the shoehorn Kyoto show that right. I never watch.
I kind of feel like this, it's a similar situation, but just everything doesn't feel shoehorned. It just feels like, okay, we've reached to those certain points. We have our three title matches and we have this weekend. We don't really need to get much further into it. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. I think the thing that we have to start wrapping our heads around, and it's not something I would have said even when Hyo turned in November, it's not something I would have said last month, but I think we have to at least start preparing for the idea that whoever beats Monte for the Dreamgate belt might have to wrestle Hyo in a Dreamgate match. I think that's coming at some point.
And it's probably going to be their first defense immediately.
Yeah, and you know, it's probably no bigger than a Champion Gate or even a Cork and Hall defense. But, you know, if it's Shun or if it's anybody from Mochizuki Dojo, you have a built-in story there with their history with Hyo. And I just can't ignore it. You know, he's the Brave Gate champion right now. He's the most over guy in the company. But it does strangely feel like there's a level for him to go up, even if I'm not sure what that is, partially because of his size, partially because of his wrestling ability. It just feels like he has another level to go.
Yeah, and it is something where that's like kind of uniquely contrasting him with this point where he has this Bravegate run that we've been talking, I feel like, since the Susumu's run, speaking of Luis Montes, challenger this weekend, thinking about Susumu's Bravegate run and the 2020 and that one that like you kind of have to go back there for the Bravegate championship to be in a kind of a strong position. I mean, we've been talking basically SB Kento kind of as the touring 1B draw as the last time that Bravegate had a level of relevance with this, but I think you kind of look at where Hyo is with it, and yeah, we have SBK had those houses in Nagoya. They were able to do those turns with Okuda and Osaka. I think this is already starting to exceed that, and like we just kind of look at this kind of scenario here where he does have like these opportunities now that it is kind of a unique window that I think that it kind of provides an interesting quirk to the year that I don't think we've really have encountered this far.
The difference between Hyo's current run and SB Kento's run, which was, again, the last time the Bravegate belt felt this hot, was you have to remember Kento's first defense was the Kamei match in Kobe Sambo Hall. His second defense was the Kamei match in Korakuen. And those two matches made the Problem Dragon hometown defense and then the UT match in Nagoya made those matches feel like ginormous deals. I mean, the Problem Dragon match, I was salivating for that. I don't remember if that hit the network or if that hit YouTube, but I was so excited to see that match, and then it kicked ass. And then the same thing with the UT match, obviously. It's the thing with Hyo, is he needs the great singles match, and I'll get more into it when we preview Champion Gate itself, but that is the only thing holding him back right now, is that you and I don't have the Hyo match that we can send to Meltzer, into Rich and Joe, and to the people that are just outside of Dragon Gate consciousness right now, but will watch a match if it has enough buzz. They're the ones that aren't getting Hyo is who he is now. And the problem is that, again, he doesn't have not even the 4-star match. He needs the 4.25, 4.5-star match to, I think, fully transcend, at least for the English-speaking world, to fully transcend his star power, for that to really sink in with people. That's the thing he's missing right now, because this Battle Royal main event was fun. His entrance popped me, but it's not it's not the type of thing that the lapsed Dragon Gate fan or the tentative Dragon Gate fan or the part-time Dragon Gate fan, they can't latch onto that. So there's a disconnect right now between the most over guy in Japan and the most over guy in our bubble. They're two very different things right now.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny in a way that I think the person that in a way that there is a similarity to, but I think that it's a lot more visible with Hyo, his overness, if that's because of Hyo dollars, or if that is because just the way that the building changes, the tenor in the crowd changes when Hyo comes out, you kind of have like the interesting kind of counterfactual to him of Sonata, and how for 2023, the big thing was like, hey, there is this huge gulf between wrestlers like Sonata. Yuki Yoshioka, I would say, kind of gets an unfair rap like Sonata, but he had his own fan base that just did not translate over.
The Yoshioka thing is insane. What else do you want from the guy? He had 7 great Dreamgate defenses. You know, it's nothing like Sonata. Sonata on his best day isn't as good as Yoshioka is on an average day.
I mean, I think it's also because Yoshioka reminded people enough of Yamato in a way that I think that is kind of a tough thing.
I don't know. I've liked Yoshioka since he was wearing the pleather blue pants when he debuted. I've always been a massive supporter of him.
The boy had bell bottoms.
I know the disconnect on his charisma. One argument being it's too similar to Yamato. The other being that he doesn't have charisma. I don't understand it. I am baffled by the people that don't see, especially that Dreamgate run, where the stories were so obvious and the output was so clear. I know where I stand in Dreamgate. I like it more than the average person. That is the one that I sit back and think like, man, what was there not to get about this 4.5-star match? Like, it's very odd to me.
Yeah. But it is something where there is this kind of gulf that I don't know if Hyo has this like 4.5-star match with Yasushi Kanda this weekend. I don't know if, for one, that changes a lot of tastemakers' minds on Hyo. I think that it is something where he, I mean, for better or for worse, being the heel that he was for as long as he was, I think that it is very similar to, it took people a while to wrap their heads, or people who've been Dragon Gate fans long enough, it took them a while to wrap their heads around KZ being more than the world's best lost post, you know?
Yeah, that's you're probably right. That's probably the best comp there is, because I'm trying to think about, like, Ishida was never this, you know? It took a long time for Ishida to catch on.
Ishida was hometown over. He was not much more than, like, young hot guy over, home guy over.
I mean, we've talked about it. You know, Maximum Era Ishida was really, really over. But it wasn't this Hyo thing. It didn't have that level of importance that the Hyo thing has.
Right. So I just wonder with that like, there is kind of like this, I don't know. I kind of look at these stars like a Sonata and like how New Japan is now and there and how Stardom kind of is, not the promotion, but what Stardom kind of is in the industry in 2024. And I think that rather than sometimes trying to reframe it around reframing a guy's career about having like this like transcendent match, like Jackie Funky Kamei has already had much better matches than Hyo has had in his entire career. Like, I feel like that if we look at it from a purely work rate wrestling kind of standpoint, but that's not that is 80% of the package, but that's not the entire package right now. And I think that that's kind of the issue with Hyo, is just that maybe he's always going to be someone that tops out at 3¾.
Yeah, he has the hard part down. It's the other part that most Dragon Gate wrestlers don't struggle with that he has to get to. But let's put a pin in that. Let's talk about Nostalgia Gate here real quick. And then I want to go in depth on some of these Champion Gate matches.
All right. So the Gate of Nostalgia comes to us from our friends at the Luck Corporation. They bring us the Gate of Nostalgia. It is a 6:00 local time start on the Dragon Gate Network. It comes from Edeon Arena, Osaka, #2, 6-match card. The way that they have phrased every single one of these matches is that this is a unit versus unit. Some of them are new units, some of them are old vintage units, and just kind of overall case. Before we kind of get into this, the Gate of the Nostalgia, just overall card takeaway for a card that was promised to be a nostalgic card. Where do you feel about this card? Like, did you feel like this is representative of what you were hoping for in this Gate of the Nostalgia kind of wrapper?
It's actually better. I think you and I were really cynical for two different reasons when this show was announced. I was just expecting a Jimmy's match. And Horiguchi, or I guess not Horiguchi, because he probably would have been doing Jimmy stuff. I expected the bare minimum on this show. I didn't look at it as anything that was going to be spirited or anything that was going to be unique. And instead, I feel really happy with this card, because you have a match that might not exactly be the deepest of cuts in the opener, you know, Natural Vibes versus Masquerade, but that match should be great. And then you have stuff like D-Courage versus Maximum, which is really interesting, Big Hug versus the original Jimmys, and then this main event, which is obviously TBD, because at this time we still have Kato listed in the main event. He will be out. But Mad Blanky versus Zebratz is a great main event. I was not expecting that. I did not think about that, and I am super into that. So I know you were a little down on this idea because you felt like it was a cop-out, if anything. I look at it as, hey, Kiyomiya is not booked. This is what they're going to do instead. And I'm very happy with the result, at least on paper.
I think that if you were to tell me that this was going to be a mystery vortex kind of show where it would be heavily Prime Zone influence, where units might still exist, or undercase Amazon Prime Dragon Gate, I think that this would have been completely as expected. Because you look at the people on the roster and you look at the groupings you want to keep together, like, all right, Big Hug need to be together with that. So you aren't doing anything with those two. But at the same time, you have to figure out, like, all right, we can't really do Fixer, because what is Do Fixer without Magnum and Darkness? So why don't we do Real Hazard? And that just is like, and pull Dragon Kid, put him into Die Hearts. And I feel like that that is a little bit of creativity that I was not necessarily expecting. It is something I still kind of look at this, and it's something that for this kind of weekend, I don't necessarily see this as like a big show. I don't see this as a big five, not come close. Does this even really like come up to like a Memorial Gate? I don't think so.
Oh, I totally disagree. I think both of these cards smoke the last few years of any Memorial Gate show.
Memorial Gate had title matches. Like, as much as we want to say, like, yeah, okay, you're putting, like, you are having a Twin Gate match with La Estrella and Jason Lee in it, main event. Like, it was not, like, a strong thing, but there were title matches with this. If you're going to do something like this, I kind of want to see a little bit more. And it is something where they had a hard thing to do. Like, you can't really do a whole lot of Toriumon stuff because you have the Toriumon reunion shows as well. So I don't know.
I think Monte and Hyo versus Susumu and Kagetora, that could headline a Cork and Hall show. So I think that is a huge match. And I think Matt Blanky versus Zebrats, again, look, if I was in the market, that is a ticket buying match for me. I am there. I am sold on that match alone. And again, that's without the semi-main event, which I think you're looking at a match that draws in the current climate 1,300 fans in Cork, and if they book it on top. I really think those last two matches are big matches.
I think Big Hug versus Yokosuka Chome, easily the biggest match on the show, feels like if you're doing this kind of thing, because Susumu and Kagetora, they have really kept them apart, I feel like, in a way that a lot of the other Jimmy's second gen guys really like. The Jimmies broke up, they lost, they disbanded, but they still kind of gravitate in similar kind of areas. I like the fact that we don't really get a lot of Jimmy Susumu and Jimmy Kagetora, and that is the kind of thing that I really enjoy with this kind of card. And that those are the things, like, I don't know necessarily looking at this, like, when you get to a point where you're trying to do Florida Brothers, I think that there's an, like, having Super Florida Brothers that feels a little weak to me, I guess, as someone who liked original Florida Brothers.
Well, you have to look at the roster. You know, who are they not including that would take the spot of the Florida Brothers? And I don't really have an answer for that. And I am the low man on the Florida Brothers act. It is not done for me what it has done for millions of people all across the world, but. Still, it's a nostalgia show.
This is not those Florida Brothers, too. That is the thing. Like, this isn't Michael and Daniel. This isn't Kensuke Sasaki. This is the Florida Brothers that they were doing after they all left those gimmicks.
The bummer, and this is a no-go on two out of the three levels, because UT is healthy, but it's a shame Maria's not healthy, and it's a shame Eita's not healthy. It would have been really cool to do a Millennials Trios match.
Could you have gotten
Rocky Lobo?
I think you could have gotten
Rocky Lobo. If Rocky Lobo was on the show, I would have flown to Osaka for it.
Could we have gotten... No, OG's still out with the knee. I kind of wanted him to be Kotoka Sito.
Oh, that would have been fun. When I look at this card, it's like the two things I might have changed... And I'm a big Dia Hearts fan. I like that unit way more than other people do. So I'm not bothered by Mochi being in Dia Hearts. I would have liked Mochi, Fuji, and Magnitude Kishiwada, but Kishiwada is working the Osaka Gleet show coming up. So you have a political you have a political battle there. But it would have been really cool to get the Millennials involved on this show. Because that, at this point, I mean, I was writing about Eita today for something I'm working on, an article for voicesofwrestling.com. You know, that stuff is 10, 11 years old now. So that is genuine nostalgia, and especially for somebody like me who started covering Dragon Gate while the Millennials existed. It would have been a lot of fun. But for the roster they have, I think they did a really good job with this. So I let's go back to the main event here and kind of work our way back to the opening match.
Sure.
You don't seem into this main event, and I'm really into this main event.
It is something where, so the main event, Mad Blanky versus Zebrats, they are probably going to move around this match in some aspect because Yoshiki Kato is still listed on the official Dragon Gate Japanese website as in the main event, but it's Yamato, Naruki Doi, KZ, Mondai Ryu, Punch Tominaga versus Shun Skywalker, Kai, Ish, and Yoshiki Kato, and Johnny Valletta. I think that this is the best Mad Blanky tandem that you could do. With other people, you need to book and other things on the show. Like Cyber Kong probably could have been in this match, but you're going to want to have, you have so many matches you're going to need to have heels, and Cyber Kong makes more sense, you know, teaming with Ginky and Ryo Saito.
The Kong thing is fun and real hazard because it's way less obvious. It's I wasn't expecting that at all. So that's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, it is something, I guess, for me as the Mad Blanky case, when we finally do our rank every unit and do like this, Mad Blanky will be threatening a very top ranking for me. And they always end up being that way for me. It is just something where, like, that's not the five that I would want in Mad Blanky. But I think that, and this kind of is like situationally, like if they're not bringing people in and if they aren't kind of with the idea that the Toriumon reunion let them kind of do a lot of the fun things, that maybe this is the best that you can get out of this. It's just something that for me, like knowing that it's going to be, at least you're going to get a salt attack from Mondai Ryu, but I don't need like Punch Tominaga. Like that form of Mad Blanky, I'm okay with leaving it in 2013.
So yeah, what I'm assuming they're going to do, and I know what will happen, the updated lineup will drop as soon as we're done recording, but what I'm assuming they're going to do is just drop one of the Mad Blanky guys. Would you rather it be Punch or Problem Dragon that gets removed from this match?
I think you can drop Punch, and
you are out of your mind. I have so much reverence for early era Punch Tominaga.
Mondai Ryu's gimmick is completely based on being the salt guy and Mad Blanky, and being what happened with Super Shenlong the second and Ape Kamada. Like that's like it is something where I feel like it's very hard to impart how over Mondai Ryu was as a member of Mad Blanky. I think that if you have like that, like Mondai Ryu, unless like his neck is really in a bad spot, he has to be there because he has to be the one kind of just being like a little chicken shit and eating the fall.
I feel like, and we talked about this, I remember when we did the Dragon Gate USA stuff, when we hit 2012, where the latter half of 2012, there is so much Mondai Ryu in like stuff that matters, which is really, really odd to look back on. The Punch run of Punch actually being a guy that matters is way shorter, but I like the Punch stuff more. And if there's a tiebreaker, we have to remember Punch did beat Shima in a singles match, and I feel like that has to hold some weight.
Like the thing that if you were going to get me to agree with you, Case, I would have here's the argument you should have laid out to me. He's going to have his black and yellow Hawaiian shirt. You know who?
I would think he would. I think KZ's going to have fucked up hair and two different colored eyes, and I think Punch is going to lean into it. I hope he's the one in the match for that reason.
Yeah, and if he's doing that, that means that his uncle Don Fuji dressed up the exact same way needs to be with him.
God, like that's what they should have done.
And that's the heartbreaking thing about like Mad Blanky is a lot of my favorite things about Mad Blanky they cannot do in this match.
Well, I said this earlier, but you know, it's the odd part of Fuji. He's a day one guy who's the odd man out because you can't do Crazy Max and you can't do Blood Generation, and there's no point in really doing a veterans unit, and that's really all Fuji has had outside of the trio with Mochi and Kishiwada. Other than that, he's been tied to Shima. But doing Zombie Fuji and Mad Blanky, that's a bummer. I hadn't thought about that. That would have been really fun.
I mean, you make this an 8-man out. Like, the thing is that, like, if you want to keep this a 10-man tag, Punch can go do Team Boku with a big R Shimizu. Like, okay, just go, yes, I know, I'm taking Big Ben off the board by saying Team Boku needs to happen. This is why I'm not allowed to make these kind of decisions. But I think that is the best 10-man Mad Blanky team you could do, is sub out Punch Tominaga, put in Don Fu.
Interesting. I'm really into the match. I don't think we've really ever had something historically like this where you have two heel units going up against one another. I would expect Doi and Yamato to be as over as John and Paul were in Liverpool in the 60s. I mean, I think this is going to be a massive, massive homecoming type feel for them. So I'm super into this. I really was not expecting this match. I think it's very cool. And I think a lot of good can come from it. So I am into this, and that is a big selling point for me on this show.
And then we have the semi-main event, Big Hug versus the original Jimmys, Yokosuka Chome, Luis Monte and Hio versus Jimmy Susumu and Jimmy Kagetora. It's also a Dreamgate preview match. You see, like, that's this match by itself shows me that there could be a gate of nostalgia that I would be more into, because I feel like there's a lot here in this match.
Yeah, I mean, look, tough night for Kagetora. He's obviously taking the fall here, unless they do Susumu getting a roll-up on Monte. But look, like I said, I think this match could headline a Cork and Hall show. I think this is a ginormous match. I am really excited to see what Susumu has left in the tank, because the last time he wrestled for the Dreamgate would have been May of 2022 against Kai, which was one of the best matches of the year. And then last year, you know, Kondo was sort of the one garnering all the headlines, because Kondo decided to be a good wrestler for the first time in his life. But Susumu could obviously still go in those Twin Gate matches. And now I'm really excited to see what he looks like here with Monte. I think Monte's in very good hands. This is a very cool match.
And something that we can say as a feather in this weekend's hat: you have found a way that your most important act in the company, Big Hug, is in the back half of both of your shows. Whereas in the past, it would be Monte one night, it would be Hio another. And you have your main event for the Dreamgate match directly previewed on night one in the semi main event slot. So there is good to this in my mind.
Yeah, no, this is great. I'm super into this. Again, a match I wasn't expecting. I think you made a great point. It's been a long time since we've seen Susumu and Kagetora together doing anything that matters. This is a very good card, in my opinion.
Then we have D-Courage versus Maximum. It's Madoka Kakuta and Ryoya Tanaka. Hey, this is the only place you could put Ryoya Tanaka unless they're bringing out the green long leg, short leg tights here. But
that would have been fun too.
That would have been funny if they were like, "All right, we're doing a Dragon Gate Future opener."
Who's left from Future? It's Ishin.
Yeah.
Is that it? Oh my god, is that it?
Well,
I guess Fuda technically.
Kamei was before.
Daiki was the Fuda guy.
Yeah, Daiki would count.
Was a Future guy. So you could have done Daiki. You could have done Fuda or Ishin, and then Tanaka, and you could have done them against a veterans unit. That would have been fun.
Yeah, there could have been something there, but we can't do that, so we have D-Courage, and they're going up against Big Ben, the Maximum pairing of Big R Shimizu and Ben K, and hey, that means we get the Maximum theme again.
Yeah, I mean, for people that weren't watching in real time, in 2018... I would consume Dragon Gate shows. I would obviously watch everything, even though at that point it felt like I was watching everything with a gun to my head. But I would watch everything through the lens of what is Maximum doing on this show, because it will probably be 4 stars. And so I hold Maximum in great esteem. I really admire their historical significance, not only fostering in Jason Lee, but the rise of Big Ben, the rise of Kaito Ishida, and the last real stand for Speed Muscle outside of Team Toriumon when we knew Yoshino was going to retire. So this, to me, is not a throwaway. I very much enjoy Maximum, and I think this match is going to kick ass.
If they do not do a mohawk for Shimizu, what are we doing here?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
This is the thing about having Maximum here, and Natural Vibes being in it, it's kind of weird spot. I think, like, if we really kind of want to have some fun and we aren't going full court press Benkei with the title, I could see a future where you bring back Big Ben and Gold Class, you know, like, and I think that could be very, very fun.
Yeah, that wouldn't bother me. You know, sometimes when Dragon Gate goes backwards, it feels a little bit odd, but Big Ben is one of those things where I don't I think they had one Twin Gate run together. I mean, it certainly feels like there's just a lot more you could get out of another run at Big Ben.
Yeah, and then from there, we get the Dire Hearts versus Real Hazard match, BB Hulk, Masaki Mochizuki, and Dragon Kid versus Ginky Horiguchi, Ryo Saito. So we're getting heel Maraha Asapa and Cyber Kong. I'm really excited to see the blue and red extensions Ginky is going to have to find, because I bet he does not have those Real Hazard extensions.
Real quick note, Big Ben were two-time Twin Gate champions, once as babyfaces and once as heels. I don't really remember anything from the babyface run. The heel run had the infamous Big Ben versus Kai and UT match, which I think we both love, and that was very good. That was a very good run. Real Hazard, look, I've never enjoyed heel Genki, so whereas, like, I'm super attached to Maximum, I'm super attached to Masquerade, I love the Mad Blanky thing they're doing, I am way more into the idea of Dire Hearts reuniting on this show than Real Hazard, just because Real Hazard, outside of Yamato and Shingo, was it was not my thing. I didn't watch it in real time, but in hindsight, not something I really seek out a ton. But this is a fun match. I wasn't expecting heel Genki and Real Hazard on this show, so I think this is a lot of fun. I'm into it.
As someone who was current at that time, Case, I remember how stoked I was for the Real Hazard logo.
And yeah, that's fair. That's a good logo.
It's a great logo, and that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, because that's like the fondness of I have of that unit. Because like the problem about Real Hazard and doing Real Hazard, and kind of like the one of the issues about, like, and this is something you can't help, but it's just one of those things that I cannot completely turn off my brain at times. It's like, oh, it's Real Hazard, but Shingo and Yamato are the members of Real Hazard that matter, and we can't have that. But it is something where, like, realistically, look, getting Maraha Asapa on the show and figuring out a way to kind of fill out the heel ranks, I feel like this makes sense. It's fun to see. It's something with like Masaki Mochizuki, for someone who weirdly has been in a lot of units. It feels like Dire Hearts kind of had to be the one he had to be a part of in this show. Like, it's not like Junction 3. They weren't going to do Junction 3 versus Blood Warriors. That's just too far.
That would have been very funny had they done that, but I'm glad they didn't.
I just think that that's practically prehistory and involving too many people that you can't really do. And that is kind of the issue with this show, is like, you know, there's certain things, like in certain units, that you have to kind of have, but Real Hazard kind of is like the case for, you got to kind of need to have a second heel unit, or like bring back another heel unit, but this is the one you can kind of get to, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a fun combo I wasn't expecting. And again, Dire Hearts loved that unit, was like a really big Dire Hearts fan.
You were
fan.
Like their number one fan.
I really was, because yeah. it was a little similar to Masquerade, where it's like, all right, this has a ceiling, because Hulk was Dreamgate champion, just like Shun was Dreamgate champion.
Yep, it was the super face unit that was restrained by their inability to do that, their leader to do promos, basically.
Yeah, but they also just had kick-ass matches all the time. Like, there was just a ton of good Dire Hearts matches. The Mochi and DK versus T-Hawk and H, a Twin Gate match, I think that's Dangerous Gate 2014, is like a 4.5-star Twin Gate match. And there's just a bunch of those.
We are Team Pantaloons.
We are Team Pantaloons, but they did. I gotta pull up. I remember it was October 2014. I got so excited here. Sorry, but it was October 2014 in Corkin. They did that 3-match series of Dire Hearts versus Monster Express. Here it is. So in the middle of this card, they did Shingo versus Dragon Kid. They did Hulk versus Yoshino, and they did Tozawa versus Mochi back to back to back. And they were all awesome. And that Tozawa Mochi match in particular, like, shocker, that match was really, really good. But there's just a bunch of stuff like that. Even though I think people love 2014 and 2016 where they existed, they don't really give Dire Hearts the credit they deserve.
Yeah, they are kind of in this like weird period that you had such a strong way of crowning Hulk. Like, I think back to 2014, Case. Whenever I think about what a coronation and how strong a champion should be coming out of Kobe World and the lead up to it. And beat by beat, I look at 2014, I look at BB Hulk, and I look at how Team Pantaloons became Die Hard. And but like the thing about it was that all was happening at a time where you had Monster Express with two of your most popular people in the company that were just basically, you could let Yoshino and Tozawa go out there and talk about what their weekly routine was. And the crowd was more into that than anything else on the show.
Mike, if my, and please keep this on the podcast, if my background noise starts to get too much, let me know. We are in the midst of a tornado warning in Chicago right now.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. Oh, geez. Oh, man.
I'm okay. It's raining very hard outside my apartment now. I moved away from the window because I was hugging that bad boy pretty close when we started. But if things get too loud, let me know and I'll make some changes, okay?
I think we're going to ride with this. Let me know if things are getting a little testy out there, though.
It's not looking good, but I'm not alarmed yet. We will see if that continues throughout the podcast or not.
All right, let's hurry through the remainder of.
It's been like taunting me the entire time. And about
we got an hour.
And then about 2 minutes ago, it's like, okay, this is gonna be a problem, isn't it? Okay, good to know.
Your phone just starts blowing up. someone's phone who maybe blew up during the card construction. Might have been one Genichiro Tenryu, might have been one Magnum Tokyo, as Renaissance is making its much adored reunion as Don Fuji and Yasushi Kanda face off against the Super Florida Brothers of Johnson and Jackson, Florida in match two.
I find it fascinating that they were able to get a Renaissance reunion here. It was really the only thing that Fuji could do. Like I said, I was not expecting it. Renaissance did not last very long. I certainly don't think of Kanda as a Renaissance member, even though he was.
It was based around him, weirdly.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was based around Magnum, technically, but then Magnum left. And so, yeah the whole thing is very odd, and I think that's actually a fun footnote to have on this show.
Yeah, like, if you're going to have, like, a weird, like, old unit, like, the other thing that they could have done is they could have had him team with Stalker Fuji, and they could have done Waku Waku Fuji Land.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Like, that's the kind of deep pull you're going to do. And I think that, like, that's the thing is Renaissance is the deep pull because you can't really do, like, Tozawa Juku. Like, there are some units that would have been, like, the perfect ones to bring back for this kind of thing. Like, not like Overgeneration, no. Overgeneration should not have come close to this. But Renaissance, Tozawa Juku, those are the places that we could have gone to. And as Case said, leading off the segment, our opener, Natural Vibes versus Masquerade. It is Strong Machine J, UT, Jackie Funky Kamei versus Kodama Nora, Dragon Daya, Jason Lee, almost straight out of Prime Zone.
Yeah, no, super fun match here. I expect this to be very good. And I, much like a few different units on this show, am very fond of Masquerade, so I'm glad they're back.
Yeah, it's something where, now, just kind of put a bow on it, I think now, going through the card, I'm perversely into Renaissance coming back for, how are they going to even, like, because then they come out to Tenryu's, like, original theme, like, WIR music or something for that unit. Like, I don't know how they're going to portray that. Like, I'm into that. I'm into Real Hazard, into Big Ben. I'm just really, like, it is something where it's just, I think the constraints of doing a nostalgia card when you've already done a lot of Torimon stuff kind of hurt. As we move on to Champion Gate 2024, production note, Case had to run during the recording. The tornado warning hit Chicago. So I'm going to take us through the remainder of the show. Case has we'll have the written review for Champion Gate on Voices of Wrestling over the weekend. I will have the Gate of Nostalgia review as well, trying to I feel like by the end of Saturday, at the very least, I kind of will have a little bit more of like a clear direction and feeling getting out of Gate of Nostalgia. But let's talk about Champion Gate. It is a 3 o'clock local time start in Osaka, and of course, three championship matches, one vacant championship, the main event for the Open the Dreamgate Championship, Luis Monte defending against Susumu Mochizuki. And it is something where I feel like we kind of contrast this to where Luis Monte was with Gate of Bayside, paying off the Shun Skywalker story, at least to where it was at that point. And now we are seeing the Luis Monte championship run, what his dance card is going to be. And you have Susumu Mochizuki, one of, if not the great technical wrestlers of this company's history. The person that, if anyone is coming into the promotion, a wrestler, and maybe is someone that not certain about who I would book against them, I would put them up against Susumu Mochizuki. And as Case said, when we talk about his last title match against Kai at Dead or Alive 2022, we've seen that he is someone that's still able to have these top line main event matches, and especially for the Dreamgate. It is something where I do kind of look at this title portion of the Osaka show, the Champion Gate card, and I am so heavily kind of feel like everything is weighted towards Big Hug that it's very hard for me to put any sort of weight behind a Susumu Mochizuki win, basically. I think that there is, of course, the freak occurrence or the Susumu Mochizuki shock, frankly, if we want to think about 2016 and then Jimmy Susumu taking the title from Shingo Takagi in that spring. That there's always that chance. There's always that possibility. But it does not work here, and it does not work for a champion who I feel like has really done a lot over the last month to kind of feel more comfortable as champion. And I think a lot of that is with Hyo, as Case and I talked about earlier, having the most popular act in the company, and one of the more popular acts in the company in recent years, be your tag team partner, your best friend. Hey, it makes a lot of things a lot easier. So I come into this match, I'm going into the weekend expecting a Luis Monte win. I think it's something where you can't discount Susumu Mochizuki, and you can't say that Susumu Mochizuki is going to have no chance in this title match. This is the company that had Kai come out of nowhere at Final Gate 2020 to defeat Yamato. So it is something, or that was Final Gate 2021, rather, to defeat Yamato. But I think that this is something where I will say 80%, 20% Luis Monte to Susumu Mochizuki, but that 20%, if this was not, if this wasn't Susumu and we weren't talking about someone who had did something in a kind of a similar circumstances, go on as a heavy underdog and win, that would realistically be more of a 95-5, if not worse than that. So my main event for the vacant Open the Triangle Gate Championships, as we said, Yoshiki Kato injured. Looked like he blew out his knee. No big specifics out there, but it's something where they knew on they knew in Gifu that he was that he blew his knee out, or I can't say blew his knee out. Don't aggregate that. Hurt his knee. It just very much looked like he blew his knee out. As someone who's seen enough of those through my life, but that means we have a vacant Open the Triangle Gate Championship. Shun moves in there to team up with former champions Kai and Ishin versus D, Courage, Madoka, Kakuta, Dragon Daya, and Ryoya Tanaka. Really have played up, I feel like, Tanaka and Ishin, all dating back to Gate of Destiny. The idea of the hometown guy, Ryoya Tanaka, getting a Brave Gate shot that he probably didn't deserve, but making the best of it. And ever since then, more and more having Ishin's number, having not getting the win. He did not get the win in the Royal Sambo over the weekend, but there were a couple moments where it looked like he was just about to get him with that. And that's going to be the big tease, I feel like, is going to be see if Tanaka can get a second fall over Ishin. It is something, though, where I kind of look at Zebrats, and it's a little bit of a shame that we weren't able to kind of talk about this. Like, like the status of Zebrats, you had Kai, who we've known his bicep was in a bad kind of shape before before the situation of Kato. Like, it was looking like that was the champion that there was a question mark with. But now we are looking at a Zebrats now where looks like whomever Max Z might be, they might try to further along. Of course, that was supposed to be the rookie there just messing along. They might need to do a third Max Z is what I'm saying, just to further bolster the heel corpse. Third title match, Hyo defends against Yuzushi Kanda. It's something where I think that we've seen good enough kind of previews of this. It's really the big question and the kind of the fun thing we're seeing over this title build is Yuzushi Kanda, after the 2023 he had, what's left in the tank when M3K is no more? When him and Susumu aren't the Twin Gate champions, they aren't partners, and there's really not a Mochizuki around there for him to team with. So we get to see that with Hyo. Hyo, we have that overall question, does Hyo have this great Brave Gate match, this elusive 4.5-star match against Yuzushi Kanda? I just think that it is something where that Hyo just might not be that guy in a singles match, and it will be something where it's just going to be difficult, really, the gulf between someone who is this over, and it's undeniable that he is that over. If people say, oh, I don't, if people parachute and say, oh, I don't know about Hyo, I don't see what they see about that, then I don't know what to tell you. That there's more than enough evidence across everything for that Hyo is that star and is that kind of figure. It's just one of those incidents, and it's not even really an incident. It's just one of those cases where you don't really get to have the easy kind of conversion, I guess, is the thing. It's something where, like, Magnum Tokyo kind of vibe with him, and it will be kind of fun to see, like, where I look at Big Hug right now. I look at them going to Osaka. If they don't leave the show or leave Edeon Arena after Sunday, 2-1, I think they dropped that match on Gate of Nostalgia. If they don't walk out of this with both belts and aren't looking at Corquin and looking at bolstering their team, then something big happened. And I just think that we're at this point where we kind of need to keep this eye on Big Hug as they move into March. Going to the non-title matches on the show, we have something that I will say. I am looking at the Gaora website. They're usually what we go with when we do this. When we're looking at cards, especially in a situation like now where Yoshiki Kato is still listed on the Gate of Nostalgia card, of course, as we're recording this, 8:31, at least for me, Central Standard Time. It's the Lex Special 10-man tag, but I like calling it what the Gaora translation is, which is the Wreck Award 10-man tag team match. It is kind of this fun veterans, Toriumon and Hoho Lun team. Yamato, Dragon Kid, Naruki, Doin Sachi, Hoko Boy with Hoho Lun versus Natural Vibes, KZ, Big Boss, Shimizu, Strong Machine J, UT, and Jason Lee. Real kind of status of Natural Vibes right now. The fact that we look at this team and, hey, this feels like the first time in a long time that we are at a big Dragon Gate kind of weekend. I mean, even though I kind of look at Champion Gate weekend and kind of what this weekend is this year, kind of, at least for me, as I said, kind of four times in the last sentence, I look at this as somewhat of a kind of a step back. And instead loading up one card rather than spreading around towards two, but you look at Natural Vibes, when's the last times that we've had a big noted Dragon Gate weekend where Natural Vibes hasn't been in at least one title match? I mean, if it's something where last year at this time, you had Strong Machine J in the main event going after the Dream Gate. So, and I, as I'm just going through this right here, I don't have case here to kind of fill for time as I would look this up. I imagine if you're looking at large shows, the big five shows, your Champion Gate weekends, your Memorial Gates, your Gate of Origins, and you look at Natural Vibes, more often than not, there will be one Natural Vibe title match. That is not the case here. And I feel like that's kind of a little bit notable, especially where the team is and their overall circumstances. The match we've been fearing, Jackie Funky Kamei versus Johnny Valletta. We can't let Jackie Funky Kamei get destroyed by Johnny. We can't have it. But that's happening here. I feel like that this has to be like the last thing for him to kind of just throw off the yoke of Natural Vibes and go and join Big Hug. Like, if he was not a member of Natural Vibes, he would not have to face Johnny Valletta. So, hopefully that coming out of this. But it's something where, like, do we see Jackie Funky Kamei land any of his offense? Do we see Jackie Funky Kamei go for a flash pin? I can't remember, and I would think that my memory would be pretty good about this. I don't think Valletta has actually, like, been in a has been in a pinfall. I don't think that he's ever had his back against the mat in Dragon Gate so far. So we have that as our match two here. Does he get on the mat? So at least we get a Jackie Knife tease. We'll see. And then our opener, Ryo Fuda return match, as we were kind of talking about and as we were getting going about the rash of injuries with Dragon Gate. Ryo Fuda returning after a severe finger break dislocation, having surgery on that. He teams with Masaaki Mochizuki and Don Fuji versus Gold Class, Kota Minoura, Benkei, and BB Hulk. Something where Fuda really had all the momentum going into the fall of last year, and everything kind of was pulled from him. Well, he's teaming with Don Fuji and Masaaki Mochizuki. We are probably going to have a Buyuden card coming up soon. It makes sense to me, like, after this match, then suddenly Ryo Fuda decides to go into Buyuden, and then kind of announce him for something like that. But that is Champion Gate. It is Sunday, and we will be back with y'all next week to review both that and the Gate of Nostalgia here on Open the Voice Gate. But I'm going to close out right here, call it from there. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case will be back with us next week, hopefully. No tornado warnings, and hopefully he is staying dry and safe in Chicago as we're going through this and wrapping this up. On Twitter, we're at Open Voice Gate. Cases at underscore in your case. I'm Fuji Heya. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.